It's Saturday night. That means it's time for the Don Tony Show.
The wait all week long is finally over. Get Don Tony's perspective on current affairs in the world of pro wrestling and much more. The Don Tony Show.
And now, your host, the man, the legend, Don Tony.
I dealt with a lot of chooches last night. Chad Gable has shoosh. I have chooch. Don't be a chooch. Oh, my goodness. Awful, awful. How's it going, everybody? It is October 14th, 2023. I didn't have to look at the calendar today because today's my brother's birthday. Happy birthday, Nick. And I'll see him later on today. Welcome to this edition of the Don Tony Show. I am Don Tony. I want to thank you very much for joining me, whether you are live, on the replay, just keep spreading the word. DonTony.com. Keep telling a friend, tell a foe. You want to piss them off? Tell them about the shows. We have a really, really interesting episode to get into today. And I know a lot of the episodes are interesting, but we have some very delicate topics to talk about today. We have to talk about the fallout from the Tuesday Night Wars. We have to talk about Tony Khan. Did he lie? Or is politically correct? Should I say it like this? Did he twist the truth as far as the WWE contract tampering while his mother was in the hospital battling for her life? You know, I tweeted something yesterday night, and I deleted it 5 minutes later. Number one, I realized that on social media, people don't know how to read. They only know how to react. And, you know, another thing also, with all due respect to a few podcasters out there, I've been doing this since 1997. Whether you like me or whether you don't like me, I am the longest running podcaster host ever. All right. And the reason why I do it is not because it makes me rich. It doesn't even pay the bills. But because I love professional wrestling, I support everything about professional wrestling. But if something needs to be addressed, if criticism needs to be made, you best damn believe I'm going to do it. And sometimes it involves some that you really, really like. Do not treat me like some bullshit internet troll that's just trying to garner a reaction. So I wrote something yesterday. I deleted it almost immediately after because of the dumb reaction I was getting. And then I also realized that everybody, just about everybody that was responding, never interacts with me, never plugs the shows, never, you know, supports what we do. You know, so why should I put it there just to trigger, you know, just inaccurate, ignorant emotion where I could put it here? So we're going to get into that in a little bit. We're also going to address that anti-Semitism storyline that they did on Dynamite Tuesday, which, by the way, was the lowest rated part of the show. I don't know if anybody's told you that. We will do the complete ratings breakdown for NXT and AEW from Tuesday. And I'm also going to read MJF's statement about the storyline. And I don't want to be a jerk. I know he's Jewish, and I know he wants to legitimately bring awareness, but he compared it to Muhammad Hassan. I'm going to read you his statement later, but I will tell you this right now. When you hear his statement, keep in mind that Muhammad Hassan's character was debuted in 2004. 3 years after 9/11, not the same week as the towers went down. So him using anti-Semitic in a storyline the same week that Israel and the Gaza Strip is at war, and then comparing it to Muhammad Hassan, I don't even know if he even remembers when Muhammad Hassan's character debuted. He was not a terrorist. He was being labeled because of what he was perceived to be. We'll talk about that a little later. And look, MJF's one of my favorites, but that doesn't mean that I can't challenge some of my favorites out there. Now, one thing I will tell you going forward, I'm going to really try hard at this. Going forward, we're going to organize these shows a little bit better. One of the problems that I get into the habit of doing is we'll talk a little AEW, we'll move to WWE, we'll go back to AEW, we'll talk NXT, we'll go back to AEW, we'll go to WWE, we'll go to NXT, and it's all a scattered mess. I want to try to keep the promotions together in one conversation. So we talk a little WWE first, then we'll do a little AEW, then we could talk about Tony Khan and his social media meltdown this week, and then I will show you why I am challenging something he wrote, a very emotional tweet. And yeah, it triggered a lot of anger last night. So SmackDown yesterday, the season premiere. Now, you know, when we go over SmackDowns and Raws, like I'll post a picture like that. Yes, I know that was a week before, but I'm just saying, like, that's what we normally do when we do a recap or, you know, comments on SmackDown. This week, I personally felt that SmackDown would be best explained as a couple of screenshots. And I don't know if you picked up on it yesterday, but we got three face-to-face WrestleMania 40 previews, in my opinion. Card subject to change, absolutely. But we had three face-to-faces yesterday on SmackDown. Stare-downs, not just walking in the back, not just kind of, no, face-to-face, where you know down the line that that will be a screenshot when they do a video package hyping up a WrestleMania match. And some of the matches, yeah, kind of predictable. But if I could best describe yesterday's SmackDown, it's the season premiere. We open up with John Cena interrupted by Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, and ladies and gentlemen, Paul Heyman. John Cena, you know, kind of giving a little respect to Roman Reigns. 1,138 days as champion. You know, Roman wants John to get out of his ring. John came around because Roman wasn't. And Roman thinks that John Cena wants a shot at his title. Now, you know, remember, there was a lot of websites trying to claim that Roman Reigns versus John Cena is your crown jewel match. No, it was always planned to be Roman Reigns versus LA Knight, which we talked about for quite some time. The biggest challenge was how much would Saudi Arabia be into that match? I know he is tremendously over here. You know, LA Knight's character, you know, you have to dig a little deeper. Plus, you know, it's not easy to put a match together, especially for Roman Reigns right now in a matter of 3 weeks' time. Because if my calculations are correctly, 3 weeks from today is Crown Jewel. So, as we discussed in the past, the only person that was best, you know, fit to face Roman Reigns next is LA Knight. And sure enough, John Cena says, you know, I'm not worthy of a title shot right now. I haven't earned it, but I know someone who has. And not only does LA Knight come out, John Cena does exactly what we've been talking about the past few weeks. When John Cena leaves in 3 weeks to go back to Hollywood, the number one thing that John Cena has done that we will look back on, and it'll be more apparent as time goes on, John Cena would have left LA Knight in a much bigger and better spot. And that's exactly what, when John Cena handed the microphone to LA Knight yesterday, he pretty much was telling him, I don't need to talk for you. You're here. Now you do it. And LA Knight, stare down, a little face-to-face, some insults back and forth between him and Roman Reigns. Probably my favorite camera shot of the entire night yesterday was when LA Knight was wearing his shades. And I tell you, that could be a pay-per-view poster down the line, a premium live event. You zoom in a little bit more, And Roman Reigns is just staring right through those lenses. But they had a nice little stare down. Jimmy Uso tries to physically get involved. And remember the storyline that we knew was coming, that Roman Reigns is not very warm totally to Jimmy Uso being back in the bloodline. And when Jimmy Uso was trying to attack LA Knight unsuccessfully, John Cena gets involved as well. And it led to a match with Solo Sikoa versus LA Knight later in the night. You have Roman Reigns. You got to look at Roman Reigns' facial reaction when Jimmy Uso hit the ring. Almost like, what are you doing here? I don't need you. I didn't ask for your help. So we get that confrontation. And I like Solo Sikoa's look as LA Knight is confronting Roman Reigns. Paul Heyman with that sinister look as well, even though you really can't see it there. But that's going to set up Crown Jewel. And yeah, we know what the outcome is. But do you really matter right now? You know, I think back to Stone Cold early on when he started becoming Stone Cold and he was feuding with Bret Hitman Hart, or as he used to say, Bret Shitman Hart. You know, Steve Austin didn't win world titles right off the bat. He lost several matches, but some of those matches he actually won, even though he lost, if you know what I mean when I say that. So LA Knight in the losing effort is just going to solidify his spot as a bona fide main eventer. And who knows a year from now? Who knows? You know, you got two world championships. Anything can happen. But that is to set up your crown jewel match. Something else that happened yesterday, and I got to tell you, fit like a glove. I almost feel like Roman Reigns when he does this, or he fits like a glove. You know, back in the day when we used to talk about Nick Aldis, years after Magnus, those days are long gone. When he presented himself with the NWA World Championship, we talked so many times how it gave us Nick Bockwinkel vibes. Now, for most of you out there, Nick Bockwinkel, way past your time, kind of past my time as well. But Nick Bockwinkel, one thing about him is if you take Ric Flair and take away his Space Mountain, and maybe you give him a little bit of saltpeter, hell, you just cut his nuts off, that's probably Nick Bockwinkel. Nick Bockwinkel personified class. You know, there was no, you know, if he was going to insult you, he was going to insult you with his vocabulary and inside the ring. But one thing about Nick Bockwinkel was he personified class. And yesterday, Triple H comes out with an announcement. And the announcement is that Nick Aldis, you see Kevin Owens there, I'll explain that in a little bit, but Nick Aldis is now the SmackDown general manager. The spot that we always thought Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville would have, why they waited years to make characters GMs, I don't know. But Nick Aldis yesterday was announced as the SmackDown general manager. On top of it, Adam Pearce is now the Raw general manager. And as Nick Aldis, you know, nice reception from the crowd as Nick Aldis is, you know, putting over WWE, greatest company in the world, Dominic Mysterio comes out. And to me, this was the line of the night. The line of the night. Nick Aldis puts out his hand. Hey, nice to meet you. I'm a big fan. And as he's shaking Dom's hand, he says, of your father. And it just, Dom's reaction, the crowd reaction, everything about it was just crisp and nailed it. And Dominic feels disrespected. And then we had something interesting happen. You know, this was something else yesterday that I tweeted and I deleted it. Because, again, people don't know how to read. They only react with emotion. Yesterday, we learned. Remember when Cody Rhodes said that as a result of Jey Uso being on Raw, somebody would be drafted to SmackDown? I will be the first to admit it. And I know a lot of you will admit it as well. we thought ultimately Cody Rhodes would be the one drafted to SmackDown. But him being a tag team champion right now, he could be on SmackDown anytime he wants. So, and guess what? They may remain tag team champions until around Royal Rumble time. Because then Cody could drop the tag titles, win the Royal Rumble, and that allows him to fuck with Roman Reigns on SmackDown. So that timing, that could very well end up happening. So just to set this up, now somebody's being traded to SmackDown, and we learn that it's Kevin Owens. Now, I like the shirt with the blue KO. I like that. That's the SmackDown colors. And ultimately, Kevin Owens would stun Dominic Mysterio. He would give a handshake to Triple H, Nick Aldis, holding his hand up high. And on social media, there is a video right now, after SmackDown aired, where Kevin Owens talks about coming to SmackDown. And he says he's happy, he's excited. What else are you supposed to say? But he also admits that this means the end for now of him and Sami Zayn as a tag team. Now, you and I have talked for several weeks that, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have kind of hit a brick wall as well as a tag team. They had that beautiful tag team title run following WrestleMania. It came to an abrupt end, you know, very recently. And now they are split up. Now, I have no issue whatsoever with Kevin Owens on SmackDown. But it was cute because I noticed something yesterday, and if you do a search on Twitter, you'll see what I'm talking about. Anytime something creative is kind of shoddy, everybody, most people, will blame Vince McMahon. Oh, Vince, he still got his hand in creative. Well, after all of these people last week saying that Vince was pushed out of WWE creative, for everyone out there that felt Kevin Owens being traded to SmackDown was sloppy, you can't blame Vince. You can't blame him this time. But that was the funny thing about it. That's what I put on Twitter yesterday, like, oh, blame Vince. Oh, no, you can't. I never said that I liked it or disliked it or anything else. I'm pointing out to the whiny heinies out there that always blame Vince for any creative decision that they don't like. They can't do it this time. Now, my opinion of Kevin Owens on SmackDown is this. I know the post-SmackDown video, Kevin Owens said he was excited, but in storyline, Sami Zayn is his best friend. They are a tag team. They are family. Kevin Owens is not happy with Cody Rhodes for bringing Jey Uso to Raw. Shouldn't Kevin Owens be even more angry at Cody Rhodes? Not only did you bring Jey Uso, that untrustworthy Uso to Raw, but now you put me on, you caused me to go to SmackDown, and now I can't even team with my partner. Shouldn't Kevin Owens want to beat the living shit out of Cody Rhodes? Look what you did to me. You brought Jey Uso to Raw, and you got me traded to SmackDown. No, we don't get any of that. That's my only problem. That's my only problem. Why would Kevin Owens be so fucking excited? The guy that he hates the most right now in storyline, which is Jey, is that why? Remember on Monday's Raw, we said, why did Kevin Owens raise Jey Uso's arm? Oh, you beat me. Now I trust you. Remember when we said that Monday? Now it's kind of like, oh, well, the last visual you'll see of me and Jey Uso is me holding his hand up. So when I get traded to SmackDown, nobody should really have a problem with it because, hey, I accepted Jey Uso. It just so happened to be 4 days later I'm traded to. That's the only issue I have with it. I don't have any issue with Sami and Kevin Owens splitting up as a tag team right now. They just split up the Usos. Finn Balor and Damian Priest will be split up soon as well. If anything, maybe some people should be a little bit concerned that they're splitting up a lot of tag teams. There's rumors that Ludwig Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci. Have you seen Ludwig Kaiser's vignette on Raw? Did you see the pictures they posted on social media 2 days ago? He looks like an oil painting. if you look at those pictures up close, it doesn't even look real. That's how much they're trying to make him look his perfection. If anybody should be concerned right now, it's the fact that there's like four or five tag teams that they are either splitting or about to split. So I don't have any issue with the split. You got to look at the bigger picture, though. They even tease Chad Gable going out on his own as a singles. You know, I mean, what's left for tag teams? You know, outside of Yeet and Cody. There's, you know, you have the Viking Raiders. Look, Ivar's been on TV by himself, and that's more because of injury. But now people are like, oh, no, you got to keep him as a single star. You want the men's tag team division to turn into the women's tag team division? That's something that nobody talked about yesterday. That's the only issue I have with it. That's the only issue I have with it. But I will say this. I think we also know now we got a new person who could legitimately challenge Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship. And who knows? Maybe Sami Zayn ends up being the guy to dethrone Gunther. That is something that now you can do. So, yeah, there's some positives, absolutely, that comes out of this. Kevin Owens ultimately could become United States champion. There's some ideas. Yeah, I like Ludwig Kaiser versus Gunther as well. I don't know about WrestleMania, though. I mean, they would have to really, you know, tweak some character development on both guys for that to be interesting. I don't think people just want to see it just for infighting. But Sami Zayn, hey, you know, get some singles feuds out of this. Hey, Sami Zayn, Drew McIntyre, I could see that happening. Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins, I could see that happening. Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura, I could see that happening. Sami Zayn, Ricochet. So you look at it, Sami Zayn, yeah, this opens up some opportunity. But you have to be concerned about the tag team division because of the reasons I just mentioned. Something else yesterday, and maybe this is what I least liked about SmackDown yesterday. Carlito. Oh, Carlito. He's happy to be back. And Bobby Lashley shows up, exchanges some insults, and you know what? Maybe my debut, my return match tonight against Bobby Lashley will be cool. And yes, we all thought it would be cool, but then the Street Profits fucked it up. The Street Profits laid him out, so we don't get a match. I didn't have any problem with any of that. What my problem is that Nick Aldis announces that next week, because of what they did to Carlito, that Santos Escobar will take on Montez Ford. Why doesn't Carlito just have his match next week? Seth Rollins has a last man standing match at Fastlane, and not even 48 hours later, he comes out. Ha, 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 ha. I have no bumps, no bruises, no marks, no band-aids, no ace bandages, no swelling, nothing. But Carlito gets a little bit beat up on SmackDown, and the week later, he doesn't have a match. Santos Escobar has instead. That's the only thing I didn't like about it. So, hey, we have to criticize something, right? We had a couple other interesting segments. We're going to have Nick Aldis doing something with the Women's Tag Team Championships. Will this set up something at Crown Jewel? I'm not so sure. But I think Isla Dawn and Alba Fire is definitely in the works. They will be having a match on NXT in a very near future. And by the way, those additional surprises on NXT Tuesday ended up happening from LA Knight to the others. We talked about that last week. But Nick Aldis, very, very busy yesterday doing his stuff. But probably the one that got the biggest attention with Nick Aldis was his interaction with Charlotte Flair. After reviewing what happened at Fastlane, Charlotte Flair next week gets a championship match against Io Sky for the WWE Women's Championship. So that match will be happening next week. But as Charlotte Flair is having a little chat with Triple H, confrontation number one, face-to-face number one from the night, Remember Collision Course, that thumbnail I made? Well, last night, Jade Cargill, Charlotte Flair, face to face, equal in height, equal in size. Maybe Jade Cargill a little bit more in the muscle definition. Charlotte Flair more in the talent department, obviously because of years of experience. But they introduce each other, and Charlotte Flair a little bit smug, you know, and teasing something in the near future. I like how they keep Jade Cargill's name on TV. She's not going to be seen every single week, but she has little interactions with wrestlers just to keep that conversation going, possible matches, a little bit of buzz. Charlotte Flair and Jade Cargill are not facing each other anytime soon, but this is going down. And that is likely going to be your WrestleMania 40 match. And I think Jade Cargill will absolutely be ready for it. You know, I don't want to compare her to the Bad Bunnies and the Logan Pauls. But if those guys could kill it like they do in such a short amount of time, you have Jade Cargill as inexperienced. And I say that word. I think that's the right way to put it. As inexperienced she was in AEW, she still knows the basics. Now WWE has to emphasize the positives, hide the negatives, and improve some of the middle ground. So we had that face-to-face yesterday. After Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso successfully defended the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships yesterday on SmackDown, as they're walking to the back, we get the Bloodline music hit. And this time, Jimmy Uso does come out with Solo Sikoa and ultimately Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. And as they're up the rampway, we get stare down face to face WrestleMania 40 teaser preview number 2. And that is Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso. They have a little face-to-face, no physicality, but just to put that little visual in there. And look, several months ago, we thought it was insane to have them fight each other at WrestleMania because it's so far away. But we're now in the middle of October. And once you get to Crown Jewel and then you start building a road to Survivor Series, and who knows if these two guys are going to be on opposite ends in a War Games match. We don't know. It's way too early to predict that. But then you get into the Christmas season, and then you got the Royal Rumble, and then it's the road to WrestleMania. So those two guys, a little innocent confrontation yesterday, but that is to tease match number 2 at WrestleMania. And then we got the one that we probably did not expect to see yesterday. Yes, season premiere. And a lot of what I'm showing you is not even matches. But this is bigger than just a SmackDown episode. We get the face-to-face. Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns. Roman saying a couple of words to Cody. Cody saying a couple of words back. Nothing physical. Nick Aldis would ultimately show up and say, not tonight, guys, not tonight. And that is your WrestleMania 40 main event. I know people want to interject The Rock. I know people think, oh, that's the marquee match. WrestleMania 40 is going to do record profits, whether The Rock is there or The Rock is not there. You do not take a year-plus story and tweak it terribly simply because The Rock becomes available. You know, The Rock understands Cody Rhodes is doing the grind. Cody Rhodes is there 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, 365 days a year. Maybe not every single day of the week, but you look at his schedule, he's doing something with WWE almost every single day. You do not take the number one guy in your company in front of the camera and behind the camera and flush that down the toilet because The Rock becomes available. That's something, and I'm not saying this to be a dick. That's something you do in AEW. If somebody becomes available and you could throw them on for one fucking night to get a good pay-per-view buy rate, or listen, ECW used to do that once in a while. we get shot, surprised with somebody who would make a surprise appearance. You know, I know Terry Gordy stood a little bit longer, God rest his soul. But if I remember correctly, he had a match against Raven none of us ever expected. You get somebody, and I know that's on a much smaller scale, but the thing is, you don't, WWE is heavily storyline driven. That's why they pop numbers, even when the amount of wrestling is not as much as what it used to be. You know when you know WWE has good shit with their storylines? When even the whiny heinies that used to say, remember the whiny heinies not too long ago? There was 69 minutes on AEW Rampage of wrestling and SmackDown only had 31. Like, I'm supposed to say, well, I guess I should be watching Rampage, you know, because of a number. Yeah, like, even if the matches were great, you would have people tell you that. There was 49 minutes of wrestling on Collision, and it was only 22 minutes on Raw. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Like, so? And they're not even talking about that right now. That tells you how strong the storylines are. And listen, I don't want too much storyline, but you have to also understand, when you have strong storylines and you could have wrestlers do things on a weekly basis and maybe 2 weeks out of the month they don't have to have a match, that prolongs their career. That allows them to rest. That allows them to heal. That's why some wrestlers are able to wrestle in their 40s, in their 50s. Because it feels like they're a full-time player. Look at Adam Copeland. This is not a knock on Adam Copeland whatsoever, but if you look at Adam Copeland closely, Adam Copeland would have been in AEW now for 3 weeks. And he's had one match. He's appeared, what, six times? He appeared at the pay-per-view. He appeared on Dynamite. He appeared on Collision. He appeared on this past Tuesday's Dynamite. He's going to appear on Saturday's Collision, which is tonight. That's five. And then, who knows, maybe this Dynamite as well, six. That means he's been on six shows and he's had one match against the Dinosaur. That's nothing wrong with that. It's about perception. But having good storyline allows wrestlers to heal a little bit. So we had that confrontation yesterday with Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. And everything yesterday with SmackDown really felt important. It really felt important. Now, match results from SmackDown yesterday. As I said earlier, we had Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso successfully retain the tag team championships over Grayson Waller, Austin Theory. Fun match. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller is a tag team that you and I, a lot of you out there, including me, wanted to see together as a tag team. Perfect. Like two young, you know, future main event assholes. That's really what they are. They are cocky future main event assholes. LA Knight beating Solo Sikoa. Jimmy Uso tried to get involved at the very end, but here comes John Cena, you know, neutralizing Jimmy Uso. Charles Robinson doing his best Aubrey Edwards impersonation yesterday, like this. He allowed it. Jimmy Uso hits the ring. As long as he didn't put his hands on LA Knight, no disqualification. As long as John Cena didn't put his hands on Solo Sikoa, no disqualification. So John Cena takes out Jimmy Uso. LA Knight hits the blunt force trauma on Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa gets pinned. Roman Reigns not happy. And the crown jewel match is on. They will make things official in the very near future. But LA Knight, one thing you got to admit, even if you're not the biggest fan of LA Knight, every week it's getting cleaner and crisper, and you could see that confidence there. I mean, he was always confident that he'd become a bigger star if given the opportunity, but if you watch closely, his timing is getting stronger. He's getting cleaner, crisper. Some of what he does, it's so smooth that he's really picking it up. And that match against Roman Reigns, even though we know the outcome, and even though we don't care about the outcome, that is the biggest test in LA Knight's career. The biggest test in LA Knight's career. Because if he can hang with Roman, then that shows that, yeah, maybe one day he can be at the top of the mountain with a world championship. Bayley defeated Zelina Vega. You know, we had, you know, Adam Pearce is a going away present, you know, before he was officially removed as SmackDown authority, I guess you could call it, and promoted as Raw GM. Zelina Vega is upset about Carlito getting attacked, and Bayley is making fun of Zelina Vega. And some reason Adam Pearce is acting like you kicked his cat in the nuts a couple of times. And he's like, if you're so angry, then why don't you two just get in the ring? But you know what was interesting? If you tuned into the watch party yesterday, and by the way, we had a fun watch party yesterday. We had a great time yesterday, but I got to tell you, props to all of you who showed up Tuesday. We had such a fun watch party on Tuesday. We watched back and forth. We did channel flipping. We watched NXT and AEW. And I'm not going to lie, it kind of fucked up my computer. Yesterday, for the first 90 minutes of the watch party, every time I was talking, my volume level bar kept moving automatically. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? It ended up after 90 minutes and sweating. And I'm like, what am I going to do about Saturday's show? I got a big show. I can't have audio issues. I found that my Google Chrome, for some reason, there was a setting that was automatically leveling my microphone. So I disabled it. Boom, it was clear. But we had a tremendous watch party Tuesday. We enjoyed both shows. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, you look back. Yesterday, we were talking about it with the watch party. When we're talking about Bayley and Zelina Vega, Bayley looked like Andre the Giant in the ring yesterday. And then right after that, Bayley is making fun of Zelina Vega's height. I couldn't believe, why was that yesterday? For some reason, I got to look it up. Maybe somebody can in the chat. For some reason, I remember Zelina Vega taking on Rhea Ripley. And yes, there was a size difference. But yesterday, there was just something different. Bayley looked like this, and Zelina Vega looked like a midget. It looked like Bam Bam Bigelow, King Kong Bundy taking on like Little Beaver. Please no Little Beaver jokes. There was a stark height difference. I didn't understand why it looked so much more visible yesterday compared to even Rhea Ripley or someone else. But Zelina Vega is great. She's great. I mean, she did a good job in the ring yesterday, but Bayley gets the win. Pretty much what you expected. And we also had Pretty Deadly make their return, and they beat the Brawling Brutes. Crowd was into it. Pretty Deadly haven't missed a beat. Even teasing a re-injury. And the Brawling Brutes look a little confused. The referee looks a little confused. But it was funny because once they immediately, you know, revealed there was a swerve, like the referee just acted like, you know, oh, no big deal. Like you would think the referee would have a little bit of resentment counting the pin. But, you know, they teased an injury. There was no injury, just to defeat the Brawling Brutes. And Pretty Deadly is back on track. So it's good that they're back. They are so made for the main roster. That was a good decision to bring them to the main roster, especially that discussion we had earlier about tag teams, you know, breaking up four or five teams. And we're not just talking bullshit teams. We're talking about mostly substantial, you know, decent name teams. Other people are going to have to pick up the slack. Pretty Deadly in line for a title shot in the near future? Maybe. But I think Cody and Jay will hold it to the Royal Rumble. I kind of feel like that's where they're going with this. So, AOP, we heard rumors about the AOP returning. Hey, what happened to Veer Mahan and Sangha? What happened to them? I mean, you know, there's some teams that they still got, but, you know, you got to start bringing them up. Well, we'll see. So that pretty much was your episode of SmackDown yesterday. This Monday on Raw, we'll have Becky Lynch. She'll be appearing, and I wonder if she'll take on Xia Li. You know, we'll see if that match with Xia Li goes down. And then, obviously, Seth Rollins. And it's going to, listen, a lot of crown jewel is going to come out of Monday. Remember the amount of money, and I'm not just let you have to think about that $10 million. That is more than a WrestleMania. So you best damn believe they are going to put a boatload of focus on Crown Jewel this Monday. That's going to be the majority of the discussion on Monday. DIY. Hey, DIY as a tag team, great. But let's also point out, you know, Johnny Gargano didn't have the greatest momentum while he was on the main roster. Not his fault. Creative's fault. Tommaso Ciampa, as great as he is, and as much as we enjoyed him, especially in NXT, you know, when we do the weekly ratings breakdown, he was always at the bottom. And believe it or not, when we talk about this coming Monday for last week's Raw, I think Ciampa is part of the lower end of the ratings again. I don't have it in front of me, but we will talk about NXT and AEW's rating this past Tuesday. We'll also talk about, you know, what went down on the cards. You know, some things were great, some not so great. Some you kind of question, you know, on the AEW side right away. Why didn't MJF defend that championship? If this Tuesday show was Title Tuesday, they had, if I remember correctly, half of the matches didn't even involve titles. You know, how you don't have your world champion for AEW standards defend the title on Title Tuesday going up against NXT, I think was a big misfire. Number two, Swerve Strickland. I mean, I get it. For mainstream fans, you know, that remember Daniel Bryan and Christian Cage, the marquee value of Christian Cage and Bryan Danielson facing each other for the TNT title. That sounds like pay-per-view. But man, Swerve Strickland should have won that match on Monday, Tuesday. Swerve Strickland should have gotten that win. The fact that he's not taking on, why? Because Swerve is a heel also, and Christian is a... That opening match, I really enjoyed it. We watched a lot of it on the watch party, but I was totally annoyed at the victory with that one. Having a Kara Shida and Orange Cassidy regain their championships, you know, I'm nothing against either one of them. I mean, I've praised a lot of Orange Cassidy. You know, he's not just simply put your hands in the pockets and do the stupid, oh. He actually could work. But this almost feels like these title changes were to please, like, personnel than fans. Yeah, Sheeta's a baby face, but where is this going? Like, and you know, I got to comment on this, too. Tony Storm, they did two silent TV segments. And as we've said already, you know, understand the movie that she's going to be appearing in. That's the inspiration of a lot of what her character is now. They were airing the silent TV segments during commercial breaks. I had people online say to me, well, DT, don't you get it? They're silent movie skits, so there's no sound, and that's why they did it during commercial breaks. I don't think anybody that produced that ever watched a silent film. When people talk, the text pops up on the screen immediately after. The second segment that Tony Storm did, there was only one text segment on the whole thing. She's looking at the camera and she's talking and she's doing this and that. We don't hear nothing because it's supposed to be silent film, and they don't show any of the text until the very end. Really, really stupid. Very, very sloppily done. And Tony Storm is nailing it right now. She's doing a great job. But we got to talk about the ratings. We got to talk about the quarters. We got to talk about MJF's statement. We got to talk about Tony Khan's meltdown. And I'm going to show you why I believe that Tony Khan may have distorted the truth. Let's use those words to be nice. I'm going to show you. Then you tell me. You tell me if I'm wrong or not. Now, before we get into the ratings, what went down on the Tuesday Night War, Rampage yesterday, just some quick results. Daniel Garcia, Angelo Parker, and Matt Menard over the Hardys and Isaiah Cassidy. We had Sky Blue beating Emi Sakura, and I think Sky Blue may be getting a championship title shot tonight on Collision against Chris Statlander. Jay Lethal over Trent Beretta and Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Michinoku over the Gates of Agony. And then Collision tonight, we got Christian Cage defending the TNT Championship against Bryan Danielson. Samoa Joe will be defending the Ring of Honor TV title. The TV title against Willie Mack. Commander will be taking on Brian Cage. Ricky Starks and Big Bill will talk. Adam Copeland will talk. And yes, there it is. Chris Statlander defends the TBS Championship. Did I say Women's Championship earlier? The TBS Championship against Sky Blue. So that is on the agenda for tonight. All right. Let's talk a little bit of Tuesday Night War. Then we'll talk about Tony Khan, a little MJF, a little bit of anti-Semitism storyline, and then we should be able to start bringing this home. Okay, 10-10-10. We've been hyping it up for quite some time. Monday night, we did a little bit of ratings prediction. I was a little off. My prediction on Monday was that NXT would get 944,000 viewers, and I said AEW would get 676. Well, we were close with NXT, but maybe not so close with AEW. That's a little tribute to the Monday Night War documentary. That was very, very hard to do, by the way, this graphic. But NXT Tuesday, 921,000 viewers. AEW, 609,000 viewers. Now, I have the complete ratings breakdown here, and I have some notes that I want to point out to you right away. The opening of both AEW and NXT were the highest ratings of the night. All right. I don't know Big Bang Theory. I don't know if that influenced it at all. I don't know what's on Tuesday night on TBS, but still, 731 is what AEW opened with, and NXT opened up with 992,000 viewers. That was the high for both shows. For anybody that missed both shows, what AEW opened up with was Christian Cage cutting a promo, a little bit about Adam Copeland, but also about the winner of the match is going to face him for the TNT Championship on tonight's Collision. So we had Christian's promo in the first half of Bryan Danielson and Swerve Strickland. On the NXT side, we had the opening of Cody Rhodes making the announcement of the Dusty Classic, making also a match. Ilya Dragunov comes out. He wants to kind of pave his way, similar to Cody, you know, the inspiration. Dominic Mysterio shows up, a little bit of confrontation back and forth, and Cody makes a match. Ilya versus Dominic for the NXT Championship on that show. And you know, during the watch, we were like, oh, we need a special guest referee. And it ended up being LA Knight as a special guest referee. So those were your highest parts of the night. I also want to point out two very important points about commercial-free programming during this. WWE had 30 minutes, opening 30 minutes commercial-free. NXT had 30 minutes commercial-free. AEW, though, went almost an hour. And again, I said this on Monday and I'll say it here again now. You know, what turned me off about Tony Khan's comments early on, this is before calling Triple H a bald asshole and saying some other profane stuff, which to me is just complete turn off. But he was basically sending the message online, and you could go read it for yourself, that if you truly support AEW, you have to watch us Tuesday. Not we're putting on a great card and this is going to be a tremendous match and you know we really believe we're going to give you the best product out there. He said that after the show was over. But if you look at his early tweets, like if you truly care about AEW, like a guilt trip, it's almost like, I don't want to be around this person. Oh, come on, if you really do it for me. That's what it kind of felt like. Do it for me. And when they were 48 minutes in, he went on Twitter and said, AEW, we're almost an hour in and we still have yet to have a commercial. You're setting yourself up for failure. Because if your rating ends up shitting bricks, what does that say? We gave almost an hour commercial free and people still changed the channel. Yes, they did. Because the first 15 minutes, they did 731. The next 15 minutes, it went down to 656. And it stood up until that hour. That hour, they were under 600,000 viewers. So they lost 130,000 viewers, maybe more, while they were commercial free. Number two. WWE had an 8-minute overrun for NXT. This was when Undertaker came out. This is probably something very important to bring up that no one has brought up. Undertaker came out during the overrun. And Undertaker gained 100,000 viewers for that overrun. The main event of Carmelo Hayes with John Cena in his corner versus Bron Breakker with Paul Heyman in his corner. I hate to tell you, but it was almost the lowest rated part of the night. Now, that's a little deceiving because NXT's numbers were very, very even the whole night. But when Undertaker came out, their rating shot up 100,000 viewers. Now, here's my point. When NXT went off the air at 10:08 p.m., NXT stood on the air until 10:14 p.m., almost another full quarter hour, okay? So let this sink in. For 6 minutes after NXT finished, AEW was still on. So NXT went off the air with 960,000 viewers. Would you like to know how many of those 960,000 viewers turned over to AEW for those final 6 minutes? Would you like to know? 17,000. 17,000. If you do the research, you went off the air, NXT, with 960,000 viewers. 17,000 of them flipped the channel to AEW. Just wanted to point that out. Just giving you the ratings breakdown. All right. Let me give you a couple other tidbits regarding the ratings. The lowest part of each show. On the NXT side, unfortunately, it's the same people for the recent month. Every single week that Tyler Bate and Butch have been on NXT, I hate to say it, but it's true. Whether they faced each other in that tournament or teamed up as a tag team, and then Tuesday they did the pub rules. It was the Brawling Brutes and Tyler Bate over Gallus. They did, I have it right here, they did 861,000 viewers. 861, still not a bad number. That's a number that kind of would coincide with the week before. So they did a solid number, but it was still the lowest of the night. Now, remember I said earlier that Braun and Melo almost got the same lowest number? They were only 3,000 viewers more. So they were almost tied for the lowest rating of the night. So, you know, they were very even for the night, but once again, Tyler Bate and Butch are involved in the lowest segment of NXT. That is something that we have said pretty much every single week over the last month. On the AEW side, and I'm sure probably nobody has told you this, the lowest part of AEW was the confrontation with MJF, Jay White, and going anti-Semitic, showing the roll of quarters. Because, as you know, the storyline, well, it's not storyline, the reality of MJF's life is when he was a young kid and Jewish, that kids would hit him with rolls of quarters. They would hit him with quarters because he was a Jew. They decided to put that as a storyline on television. They lost about 40,000 viewers during that segment, which doesn't sound like a lot. They never got them back. The overrun, like I said, the overrun, they had 600,000 viewers. But from the segment, let me put it like this, okay? Right before they did the angle, the anti-Semitic angle with Bullet Club Gold and MJF, they had 589,000 viewers. When the main event started, they had 30,000 viewers less. They never gained the viewers back. Once those viewers decided, let me change the channel. And here's another point I want to bring up. A lot of those viewers switched over to NXT because NXT, during that segment, gained 49,000 viewers. AEW lost 41,000 viewers. So it's a very good argument that all the people who turned off AEW at that time watched NXT. They didn't gain any of those viewers back for the rest of the night. And like I said, that overrun, only 17,000 of 960,000 decided to watch the final of Adam Copeland versus Luchasaurus, I might add. So, you know, all right. A couple other tidbits for those that are interested. I'm trying to see. Okay. The highest point outside of the opening quarter. Because the opening, everybody's excited. They want to see what each show starts out with. You had Swerve Strickland and Bryan Danielson and Christian's promo on AEW. On the NXT side, you had Cody Rhodes, Ilya Dragunov, Dominic Mysterio. If you take out the beginning and you go the rest of the night, the highest quarter for NXT, believe it or not, Dominic Mysterio versus Ilya Dragunov. Dominic Mysterio beat everybody. And look, I'm not like this gusher about Dominic Mysterio. I really enjoy his work, and he is, you know, a year ago to now, it's amazing how he has improved. Dominic Mysterio consistently draws the biggest ratings in NXT. Outside of Becky Lynch winning the women's championship that night against Tiffany Stratton, Dominic is blown away. Finn Balor's appearance, Rhea Ripley's appearance, AJ Styles' appearance, and honestly, he drew almost 100,000 more people than when John Cena and Paul Heyman were on. So point that out. On the AEW side, the highest segment outside of the opener was the final few minutes of Chris Jericho and Powerhouse Hobbs, what transpired afterwards, and the Roddy Strong video. They did with Adam Cole in the house, and, you know, there's no Wi-Fi, no cell phone footage. So that actually did 674,000 viewers. By far the biggest part of the night. And that goes to show you that sometimes you don't have to have 4 or 5-star matches to pop a rating. Many weeks we've been talking about how MJF and Jay White, MJF and Adam Cole, MJF and Samoa Joe have been the biggest ratings in the night, and they're not matches. That should tell you something. But the anti-Semitic storyline was the story. Before we even talk about the way Tony Khan treated everything this week, let's talk about the anti-Semitic storyline. After Jay White beat Hangman Page, Bullet Club Gold is at the ring, cutting a promo. MJF comes out. And just to summarize it, Jay White, who still had possession of MJF's championship, you know, instead of storyline where Tony Khan orders Jay White to return the championship, MJF says to Jay White, look, you know, you haven't earned that. For once in your life, do the right thing. Give me back what's mine. Jay White is not giving it back. And he shouldn't. Storyline-wise, they want to go this route. Jay White, you know, somebody walking around claiming that they're champion when they're not, that's a storyline we've seen many times over the years. And it's working. But then they decided to do what I showed you earlier. As they're throwing insults to MJF, Juice Robinson pulls out a roll of quarters. All right, we could take the rating off. Let's take the rating down. Okay. Pulls out a roll of quarters with MJF's name on it. MJF starts getting a little profane about it, you know, because obviously this is a shot at the fact that he's Jewish. Remember that fan sign a couple of weeks ago where he had he brought quarters for MJF? You know, the story is when MJF was a young kid, because he was Jewish, he would be hit with quarters. So they decided to put that as a storyline. The same week that Israel went to war. There are millions of Israelis and millions of Palestinians who want nothing but peace, are all, you know, at war right now. They're victims. They're held hostage, technically. We have tragedy, deaths, destruction. And the same week that this goes down, with a clear head, they think it's okay to do an anti-Semitic storyline on television. The net blew up immediately about this. TMZ, which, as they always will do, TMZ covered it. That fans are in an uproar about AEW doing an anti-Semitic storyline. You had a lot of people on TMZ's website that don't follow wrestling that were ripping the shit out of AEW. Like, how do you do that the same week? And I'm going to go a step further because that's what I do. MJF issued a statement about this. I'm going to read you MJF's statement. Then I'm going to say a few things. And one is going to be really controversial. MJF in response. I will say this also. Some people online, oh, you're not Jewish, so you can't talk. That's the same nonsense I heard that when people were outraged about George Floyd getting killed by cops and people, well, no matter which side, you're not black, you have no right to say what. I mean, that's just, you're human beings. Anybody that was offended by, you don't have to be Jewish to be offended by this. And that was the perception a lot of people were trying to put on others. Are you Jewish? Does that affect you? Are you Palestinian? Are you this? Then shut up. Well, MJF posted this statement, and I have some issues with it. MJF says, and I quote, his opening line, Muhammad Hassan was portraying an evil Muslim terrorist. Before I read anything else, as I said at the beginning of this show, Islamic terrorist Muhammad Hassan debuted that character in December 2004. Not September 18th, 2001. Not December 01. Not December 02. Not December of 03. 3+ years later. They did an anti-Semitic storyline the same week as the Israeli war. MJF, Muhammad Hassan did not debut as an Islamic terrorist. Muhammad Hassan and Daivari, I remember the vignettes where they were on the street with the beautiful neighborhood in the background, that they were being hated on because of how they looked. Get the storyline right. But unfortunately, because people are afraid to confront him, people love it, and MJF is arguably my favorite star in AEW. I support the guy. I'll continue supporting the guy. But to open up anti-Semitism with Muhammad Hassan played an Islamic terrorist, 2004, he was not. When he first debuted, he was not. And it came out 3 years after 9/11. But he got away with that because that's what happens online. MJF continues to say, I'm actually Jewish. Again, everybody, because he's Jewish, he has more authority to do an anti-Semitic storyline because at the end of the day, it's real life. He's sending a message. This is supposed to be a learning experience. My friends, the same week, use any black person you want, any African-American. George Floyd, that's because that's one of the worst tragedies. Yes, he had a criminal history, still did not deserve to be treated the way he did. That cop should rot in jail. In fact, I want to hear one day that he gets the Jared from Subway treatment, that he gets his ass kicked in jail. Imagine the same week of the George Floyd tragedy, AEW, WWE, any wrestling company decides they're going to do a storyline where somebody, instead of bringing out a roll of quarters, they're going to bring out some type of food that kind of stereotypes a black person. Or you bring up something that's notorious with abusing a black person. What if you would have brought out a black person on AEW and somebody brings out a police outfit and a badge? You tell me what the fuck is different. You tell me if the black, well, I'm black and that's my story and this is a learning experience. No, this was cheap heat. This was not awareness. People watch wrestling to be entertained. You want to do a public service announcement. You want people to learn. Like I wrote on Twitter, and it went over a lot of people's heads. What pissed me off about this storyline, and I'll say it right now. Right after that shit aired on TV, Tony Khan announces he's dedicating 50,000 toys for Toys for Tots at Christmas. We're in October. Right after that storyline, they make the announcement, I'm giving away 50,000 toys for Christmas. Tony, give away 50,000 rolls of quarters to the people affected in the Gaza Strip, in Israel and Gaza. You want to make good? Donate 50,000 quarters. That 50,000 rolls of quarters, that's $5 million. Right after that, but I'm Jewish. But I'm giving away 50,000 toys in December. But this is storyline. But nothing. That was uncomfortable. And I'm not black and I'm not Jewish. And it still felt extremely uncomfortable. That was awful timing. And instead of just owning it up or shutting the fuck up, this is what MJF says. And I will not interrupt again. Muhammad Hassan was portraying an evil Muslim terrorist. I'm actually Jewish. I've actually gone through this. This is my real life, my story. And I look forward to giving catharsis to every single person who's ever been opposed or bullied. If you think I'd play with that or take it lying down or worst of all, hide from the hard conversations like a coward, you're on crazy pills. I look forward to the hard conversations this starts and creates. I look forward to people further being educated. And he continues on to say, my life's work is to stand up to any and all injustices done to people due to something as stupid as being different. To anyone that thinks this can't be done through the avenue of professional wrestling, then that's an indictment on things that have happened in the sport's past. I look forward to bringing this sport to the present. I look forward to knocking Juice Robinson's teeth down his throat. And most important, I look forward to getting back the Triple B. And then he finishes up by saying, that's a Tony Khan tweet. Yes.
Chelsea's ready.
All right. So that's his argument. Didn't he just say in the media scrum at WrestleDream that he wants to bring back old school professional wrestling and simple things that don't require wrestling? Since when did suddenly this is how you do awareness? This is how you spark awareness? The same week that people are being tortured, killed, murdered, and held hostage, that let's do that storyline to bring away. Did that feel like awareness or did it feel like cheap heat? Sorry, MJF. It's awful what you went through, but you do that to some other ethnicities out there. You do that to somebody who's gay. Do that right after that nightclub tragedy in Florida. Mock somebody who's homosexual or bisexual on AEW television and then write, well, you know, I'm gay and I'm bringing awareness. You see how the world reacts to that. I got really turned off by that. Not on the level, though, of Tony Khan's behavior leading up to Tuesday and afterwards. Now, I did not screenshot everything. There's too much. But before I even show you about the ratings and the Tuesday Night War, I want to show you one that you're probably not going to see much of anywhere. When TMZ wrote the story about fans in an outrage about the anti-Semitic storyline, some people, fans on social media, posted the link for the TMZ article. Do you know that Tony Khan was actually DMing fans, confronting them about reposting the TMZ article? You want proof? Here you go. This is Tony Khan DMing a wrestling fan. I got the point that you didn't like the angle on the second tweet, Travis. Message was received hours ago. I don't think, quote, tweeting TMZ is doing any good. This is Tony Khan DMing a fan about tweeting the link for TMZ about the anti-Semitic storyline. The fan responds back to Tony Khan by saying this. How often do you slide into a fan's DMs to mock a legitimate critique? I love AEW. In my opinion, you have the greatest roster in the entire industry. I've been over a dozen AEW shows, have a couple of friends in the company, and have promoted your brand extensively. If I could recommend anything, it would be just to acknowledge, not just acknowledge our legitimate concern, but address it head on, not kayfabe, on next week's Dynamite. So Tony Khan's going into fans' DMs because they don't like the storyline and just bringing awareness that TMZ covered it. Just want to give you an idea of what's been going on there. So now let's just briefly talk about what Tony Khan was doing during the week. And I'll say this right off the bat. You're not going to convince me that executives in Warner Media are on the same brain wavelengths as Tony Khan. You can't tell me that executives in Warner Media act like this. You can't tell me that Warner Media executives that have this big show on is cool with things like this and him going in DMs and then being profane and vulgar leading in to the Monday night war, the Tuesday night war, whatever you want to call it. He goes on Twitter and he calls Triple H and Shawn Michaels bald assholes, especially Triple H, obviously. A bald asshole. Actually posted, spray painted, bald asshole. Now, what's interesting about it is last year when they were taking shots at Triple H, we learned that a couple of months earlier, Triple H was fighting for his life. But it's okay. You know, it's okay to call him a bald asshole. We get the shows, and a lot of people feel that Shawn Michaels, NXT, did a much better job than AEW. So somebody, just for fun, posts this painting of Shawn Michaels with a cigar, and it says underneath, Booker of the Year. Tony Khan responds back by saying, actually, I'm pretty sure after last night, sure that last night blew whatever chance he had at winning that award. My God, it's 2.5 years since we posted that thumbnail calling Tony Khan a petulant child. We appreciate that he loves wrestling as much as he does. Well, let's be honest, everyone. We are using Tony Khan. We are using Tony Khan. There's not a lot of people that like this guy that thinks that he's a... All his cursing, because he cursed out fans. He cursed out Vince McMahon. He went on some show and was like saying all this ridiculous stuff. Everybody's chuckling it up. Honestly, it's almost like you're hanging out with a group of people, and there's one person you really don't like that's just like an annoying little nerd, but he fucking shows up and buys everybody drinks. He buys everybody food. He shows up and, hey, he takes care of this, he takes care of that. Hey, oh, Tony, come here. Oh, hey, oh. That's what it is. We're all using Tony Khan. This guy we would not want to do business with. This guy we would not want to have in our house. This guy we would not have as a close friend. But as long as he wants to overpay on wrestlers and he wants to book 50,000 wrestlers and give us 4-star matches and give us this, give it up, hey, we'll keep taking it. And for some people online, they have to emotionally masturbate him. We're all using Tony Khan. We're all using him because he has money and he doesn't care if he takes a loss. You see If this guy was making big profits in AEW, you don't think that that would be plastered all over our feeds every single week? You'd see the TV deal? You think if Warner Media comes back and says, hey, look, Tony, we got to have to, you know, like, give you the same amount as last time, or these numbers are not very good, you know, we have to compensate somewhere, you know, we can only give you 100 mil. That's fine. As long as I have the TV, that's fine. I don't care how much I lose, that's fine. That's the perception. We're all using him because it's not about making money. It's about him making history and him being the top. He got so angry because one fan said that Shawn Michaels should be Booker of the Year. I go further. He goes on to say this. This week, two active decades-long rating streaks from two great legends were ended. With all due respect, until this week's head-to-head AEW on TBS versus WWE on USA, neither John Cena nor The Undertaker had ever been on a WWE show under 1 million viewers, under 400,000 in a demo. This is the same guy that doesn't have a fucking clue that John Cena is doing a game show on the same network that his fucking show is on. This guy actually thinks throwing shade to John Cena, I could see him having a little shade to Undertaker because Undertaker, I think, threw a little remark not too long ago. But this is what this guy cares about. Demos, Booker of the Year, match ratings. This is an immature, petulant child who hates WWE, who has hated WWE for decades, and will blow tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to try to share in the wrestling history and try to take away anything that WWE, he can't have that. I must have it. I must have it at all costs. This guy hates WWE. Going back to the message boards, going back to the Ring of Honor days, going back to this guy never was a fan of Vince McMahon, despised him. There's a lot of people on social media that are exactly the same viewpoints as Tony Khan. Difference is he's got billions and everyone else doesn't. Someone else becomes a billionaire down the line, they might want to try to create a product because we don't want WWE or Vince McMahon to have their revenue. We want it for here. But here's where it gets, to me, I think, probably the lowest of the low. And this is a touchy situation, and this got some people very upset yesterday. Now, I will add that he also tweeted about Vince McMahon abusing power. I mean, there's so many tweets that you could choose this week. But I want to show you one more. This weekend is the one-year anniversary that Tony Khan's mom, her life was saved in the Mayo Clinic. Now, when it comes to moms, I have admitted many times in the past, I'm a mama's boy. I am very, very grateful that my mom is still with us. My mom almost died. She tactically was pronounced dead two times 6 years ago. She's got a pig valve in her heart. All right. So when it comes to someone being close with their mom and caring for their mom, I wholeheartedly feel how Tony Khan is feeling. But something very weird, a weird vibe happened a couple of days ago. And I got to bring it to the surface. Tony Khan wrote this. He wrote this. This weekend marks 1 year since the Mayo Clinic saved my mom's life. During her ordeal, AEW talent came to me alleging WWE tampering, inducing them to break their contracts. I'll never forget those phone calls at her bedside in the hospital. It's when business became personal for me. Now, for anyone out there that is a big Tony Khan supporter, AEW supporter, and hates WWE, to use your mom being on a deathbed and saying a WWE, what he is claiming in here is that almost as if WWE knew that he was by his mom's deathbed and they were telling AEW wrestlers, you know, Come on, come over. That they were calling him up. Just let this tweet sink in. You want to talk about it's the anniversary of the Mayo Clinic saving your mom's life. Beautiful. You want to put up a link so if people want to donate money for research or something like that. Beautiful. But in the same sentence, 1 year ago, my mom, her life was saved because of Mayo Clinic. And while I was at a deathbed, WWE is calling my talent, telling them to leave the company. That's when business became personal. Doesn't that seem a little strange? Doesn't that seem a little odd? Distasteful? I'm going to tell you what I posted yesterday. I'm going to show you what I posted yesterday. That I had people immediately not only challenging me, but, you know, saying is this is what social media has become. Like, I fucking troll online that I was putting something up because I legitimately think that he was twisting the truth. And because some of these people are so goddamn in bed, you know, to get a like, a retweet, to feel connected in a group of people, instead of just respecting my viewpoint or disagreeing with it, trying to label me as a hater and a troll. I'm a fucking hater of AEW. Are you nuts? But I'm going to call out weirdness if I see it. I'm going to show it to you right now. Look at this tweet. He says, 1 year ago, this weekend. So we're October 14th. 1 year ago this weekend, the Mayo Clinic saved his mom's life. During her ordeal. Now, for those that don't know, this is very important. You got to follow me with the dates, and you'll get it. Trust me, I read this 3 and 4 times before I even wrote what I wrote yesterday. So when I write something, I'm pretty confident that I'm not making a mistake. She had 2 strokes. She had 2. She had 1 weeks earlier. She was rushed to the hospital, I think the Mayo Clinic, and they couldn't find anything. They sent her back home. She had a 2nd stroke. And that's when her life was in dire jeopardy. And the Mayo Clinic saved her life. That is the quick synopsis for those that want to know. So she was in the hospital for a stroke, sent back home, had another one a few weeks later. Very, very serious. They saved her life. That's the overview. Okay. Now we talk about dates. We talk about dates. 1 year ago. William Regal. Remember William Regal asking AEW to be let out of his contract? I want to direct you to the video screen. And for those in audio only, no worries. This is Fightful from a year ago. Now remember the timeline. October 14th, last year, right around that time, Tony Khan's mom, her life was saved from the Mayo Clinic. During her ordeal, from her first stroke to having her life saved, he claims WWE was doing this, and that's what made it personal. Okay. Last year, Fightful posted a recap of Tony Khan's conference call revealing that William Regal will be leaving AEW by the end of 2022. Now, I want you just to pay attention to the print that is bold, the bold print here. I got a phone call saying William Regal had approached Mega and said it was all very legitimate and valid stuff. Basically, he has a son who works in another wrestling promotion, and he really wanted us at the end of the year when we had the option to renew his contract. He was asking that we would not. Nothing bad. We were having a great time working together, but this is an opportunity for him to go back and work in these golden years of his career with his son. Okay, no problems. Now we scroll down a little bit more. Quote, I got a message from William Regal asking if we could talk. I made time to talk to him. I went outside the hospital. I'm sitting in a park bench in front of the Mayo Clinic, and we had a very long talk. Now, I got to find the all-out remark. Let me find the all-out remark. Okay. I'm just looking on his quotes. Hold on. Let me see where I can find the all-out remark, because the all-out is what ties this all together. Hold on a second. All-out. Here we go. Okay. Tony Khan began revealing that his mom suffered a stroke between All Out and Grand Slam, and then suffered another stroke in October. Okay, here's the timeline, everyone, and I want you to focus on this. She suffered a stroke between All Out and Grand Slam, and she was sent home. Okay? All Out took place on September 4th, 2022. Remember the date, September 4th, 2022. All Out was September 4th. Her first stroke was after September 4th. Grand Slam, if I remember correctly, was September 21st, right around that time. So sometime between September 4th and September 21st, his mom had her first stroke. She was sent to the hospital. They couldn't find anything. They sent her home. She had a second stroke in October, which is right about now, and the Mayo Clinic did surgery and saved her life. Okay? You follow me so far? So between September 4th and the third week in September, she had her first stroke. Remember, they sent her home. They couldn't find anything. But still, probably wasn't feeling well. So from around after September 4th to October, this is when this all happened. Okay. Now I show you this. Backstage news on AEW's response to alleged contract tampering by WWE. Look at the date. This date is August 24th. Not only that, Fightful, if you're a paid member, Fightful reported this several weeks before August 24th. This is when Mega and WWE told WWE Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan, remember the famous words, knock it off. This week of August 24th, Tony Khan had a meeting with AEW talent addressing WWE alleged contract tampering. His mom didn't have her first stroke until a few weeks later. This contract tampering was already personal. This contract tampering, allegedly contract tampering, happened weeks before April 24th. We only knew about this meeting on the week of April 24th. So I ask you, you go back to Tony Khan's tweet from this weekend that during her ordeal, WWE was tampering with contracts, and that's when it made it personal. August 24th, there was nothing wrong with his mom. It may not be a big deal to you. I'm glad his mom is doing better. That's the bottom line. But why bring up your mom's ordeal if his brain was rattled for a month or two? These motherfuckers are trying to take my contracts away, and you were all discombobulated at the same time your mom was going through this 6 weeks later. I get it. Nothing else matters in life. He was aggravated, angry, looking in the back of his shoulder. These motherfuckers are trying. But he's making it sound in his tweet. Remember, this is when it became personal. Why would it become personal while you're in the hospital? Come on. Am I mentally retarded? Am I disabled? Is my brain fried? Am I like had so much drugs that I just can't comprehend anymore? Doesn't it feel like to you that this guy is putting the two together to make it seem like, hey, even in the middle of my mom dying, WWE, they're trying to pull contracts away from me. Why did these people on social media, especially podcasters that I respect, why were they calling me out like I'm an internet fucking troll? I, yesterday, posted those two links and wrote, September 4th to September 21st is when she had her first stroke. Before that, nothing. So if they already, weeks before August 24th, already told WWE, knock it off, why did it become personal in the hospital? That's when I learned, come on, man. I know there's some people that, you know, their favorites cannot do no wrong, and I still support AEW, and I want fucking Tony Khan to do a great job because I get spoiled as a wrestling fan. I want good shit. I want good storylines. I want good matches. I want some of my favorites to wrestle on TV. I want to see matches I never saw before. But this is not healthy. This is not right. This is weird. This is just... this is a petulant, immature child with some legitimate behavioral issues. And just because he could throw out billions and there's people online that think that they're going to get a job if they just stroke the right people. No, you get jobs because you could make something better than you actually could perform. Not how, based on how much you could kiss somebody's ass. So you tell me. Seriously, I know I say this every week, but I'm saying it here now. After the show is over, and we're going to be done very, very shortly, post in the comments section, how am I wrong? How am I wrong? If they knew in the middle of August that WWE was doing this, and they actually told Nick Khan and Stephanie, knock it off. Dates do matter. Times do matter. Her first stroke was after the first week in September. You read that tweet, and it's easy to interpret. While I'm in the hospital, during the ordeal, on her deathbed, WWE's trying to tamper with contracts. Some of you last night should be kind of embarrassed, but you won't have the nerve to apologize. And I don't really need an apology. But deep down inside, like I wrote on my tweet that's still on my page right now, you know, some people need to learn to read before they react. They see something, they think, oh, this troll, this hater, oh, how could you even bring that up? That's fucked up. That's disturbing. It's about his mom. And it's that. No, it is disturbing. It is disturbing. If I turn around and I tell you 2 years ago I had a cancer scare, which I did, and I still have to get shit done with for my prostate, but my level is pretty stable right now. If I turn around at the same time and I say, oh, yeah, by the way, while I'm in the midst of my prostate cancer, you know, Mish, who was supposed to be my friend, stabbed me in the back and said all this stuff and was doing all this stuff. And then you start looking back at the time and like, no, your problems with Mish didn't happen until a year and a half later. That's kind of disturbing that you would actually try to add extra hate on Mish. And I'm actually defending the guy right now. I'm not shitting on him. People would be like, wow, that's kind of fucked up. You're actually trying to make it seem like he was trying to make your life even more miserable while you're dealing with a cancer scare. No, you blend the two together. When you make a claim like that, when you have millions of people viewing your stuff and you have millions of dollars, billions of dollars involved, yeah, words do matter. Words do matter. And to turn around and to write something like that, and somebody as nobody as me that could turn around and look at the dates and say, this doesn't add up. That is fucking disturbing. That is weird. That is not normal. What you have seen in the last 7 days is not funny. I didn't laugh at all at any of his stuff. When the rating came in, I didn't laugh. I wrote on Twitter, you know what? 1.5 million fans watched wrestling Tuesday night. And instead of people just accept that, oh, what about the channel surfers? What about the channel surfers? These aren't real numbers. The channel surfers. I said, so when a baseball game has a fucking commercial break, for 9 innings, 18 commercial breaks, and people change the channel. They factor in the 18 times they change the channel during a commercial break that the ratings for the playoffs aren't really the ratings because people are changing channels. Fuck you. These are really weird people out there. 1.5 million fans watch wrestling on Tuesday. I liked AEW on Tuesday. I liked NXT on Tuesday. All right? But this is weird. This is not normal. And it's funny because when people within AEW and the elite media also are starting to see that it's not normal, now they say the word in AEW is that they wish Tony would just give up his phone. What the fuck does that even mean? What does it even mean? You tell me what that even means. I saw this super chat come in before, and I'm going to play it now for a reason. Because I think it kind of sums up what I've been saying. Thank you for the 10th spot, Frank. He says, I saw what you wrote before deleting it Friday about Tony Khan. He has always taken WWE business personal. those people that jumped at you ignored most of his hateful remarks for the WWE, towards the WWE for years. That's what it comes down to, everyone. 3 years ago and 4 years ago, the Impact Wrestling stuff was cute when he would throw little shots at WWE. Remember those little vignettes with Tony Schiavone and he's on Impact Wrestling and, you know, he would do interviews. He would go on, you know, various podcasts and he would throw shots at Triple H and Vince and WWE. And remember when Vince stepped down last year? I am now the longest tenured CEO in the history of wrestling. This guy has always had a personal hatred to WWE. It's just a lot of people online, like Frank just said, just ignored it for years. Now it's so up in front of your eyes. If you do ignore it, now you're getting called out on it. Suddenly people are give a shit? No, they don't give a shit. They knew what he was doing 3 years ago. They just have to say something now because it's glaringly obvious. People have picked up on it. The bloom is off the rose, as some people like to call it. This is weird. And I'm sorry. I want to like the guy. I support AEW. There are too many good wrestlers there. There are too many people that I'm friendly with that are there. There are people behind the scenes that are working their ass off to make this company grow. But at the end of the day, the person who runs the ship, you know, it's almost like, you know, all right, you know, I work for a cruise ship. But you know what? The driver, you know, he's a little unhinged. Sometimes he just, you know, he sees open waters and let me just, you know, open it up. You know, you get you little concerned about the driver of the ship that maybe, you know, there's a couple of eggs short of a dozen. And just because you're a billionaire doesn't mean that makes you mentally stable. It just means you could buy your way out of a lot of situations. And nothing I say is going to change anything, but I will tell you this. That guy, Travis, that Tony Khan DM'd, something tells me Travis is not as excited about AEW because the owner is a dick. I'm sorry. If I know that somebody is an absolute asshole, but he does a great job, why am I going to support him? I'm not going to try to bring up Trump as an example, but if someone does a good job, but they're the biggest asshole, unhinged, strange person, why am I going to support them? You know, it's a turnoff. It's a turnoff. When you see, this is a turnoff. It was a turnoff. I brought this up before. When Eric Bischoff, during the Monday Night Wars, showed up in the middle of the ring on a Harley with a crown on his head, it's good to be king. That was the turning point of me supporting WCW. I was like, you're a dick. I mean, I big fan of Eric Bischoff. Now, I respect him. You know, I don't agree with everything he says, but during the Monday Night Wars, when they were giving away results and they threw the shade at Mick Foley, do you think 500,000 fans all said, yeah, fuck that show. Fuck Mick Foley. Yeah, you tell him. Yeah, put the belt on him. No, they were like, fuck you. Change the channel. And they never changed it back. You think that this is cool. This is not Paulie Dangerously in the 90s. This is not Paulie Dangerously in the 90s. I supported ECW from 93 on. I fucking keep it back there as a tribute because of how much I loved it. Trust me, no one in wrestling, fans, people that work there, think that this is Paulie Dangerously cool. This is not. This is not, at least at that time. And the funny thing is Tony Khan trying to, like, mimic Paulie Dangerously when WCW was pillaging ECW's roster? You know, WWE's contract tampering? Let me cut a promo on Stephanie and Nick Khan? Guess what? This is not owned by the McMahons anymore. This is owned by TKO Group Holdings. Why don't you call out Ari Emanuel? Why don't you call out the board of directors who have a majority over the WWE board, 6-5? Vince owns 16% of the stock. So you start calling out TKO Group Holdings. Let's see how they respond. Something tells me some of them are going to just fucking, they're going to answer back. They know Triple H ain't going to answer. They know Nick Khan's not going to answer. Nick Khan in an executive world will call him a kid, and that triggers a lot of mental emotion from Tony Khan. That's how they respond. he's calling out people that he knows are not going to say a damn thing online. Call out TKO Group Holdings and let's see if any of them respond. All right. Before I wrap this up, because I'm sure you heard my wife politely interrupted me a little earlier. Her dog is at the doctor's, the vet. We got to go pick her up. So I got to stop bringing this home. But no worries, because tomorrow we have the sit down, October 15th, 8:05 p.m. But not done yet. I have a couple other things I want to get into. Also, the next Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show will be on October 24th. So you could start marking that down on your calendar. And if you want to get in on this week's Q&A, that doesn't look good. That looks okay. This Thursday, I'm going to be recording it. Got to go to YouTube, community section. I do it there because everybody has access to it. Post your question there. Just try to keep it one to two the most, because we want to spread it out evenly. So you have until Thursday, probably at 12 noon, to get your questions in. Also on Patreon and on the channel members section on YouTube, I posted the winners of the Fastlane contest. So congrats to both. I don't remember exactly who won. I think Anthony Alston won on Patreon, and I think Ronnie C won on YouTube. I'm pretty sure those were the winners. Don't hold that on to me, but I'm pretty sure those were your winners. All right. CM Punk. I'm giving you a little teaser for Monday, but I got to bring it up now. Two things. CM Punk was spotted in Orlando yesterday. A lot of wrestling sites decided to only give you half the story. Oh, CM Punk was spotted in Orlando. They post the emoji. No, they had that Cage Fury MMA event yesterday. That's why CM Punk was in Orlando. So if anyone out there that, you know, thinks, oh, maybe he's meeting with WWE, he was there for the UFC, for the MMA event. Also, we're going to talk about this on Monday. That is a little preview of Monday. The Elite Media is back. Not only are they reporting that WWE has chosen not to sign CM Punk, they're actually using words like WWE declined or refused to or turned down. No, the truth is WWE has chosen not to sign CM Punk yet. Not yet, but yet. They have chosen not to sign. Maybe you could say that. I sound like somebody from England. WWE has chosen not to sign CM Punk yet. Yet. They have not signed him yet. Survivor Series is too close. I know some people say, oh, it's November. It's not that close. It's still a ways away. No, you have CM Punk show up in November, and then what? If CM Punk's being brought back with the specific reason of fighting Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, you do it more Royal Rumble time. Or you might even do it WrestleMania time, just like they did with Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins 2 years ago. Just because WWE didn't sign CM Punk now doesn't mean they're not going to sign him. It means they're not signing him now. Now's not the right time. Not brain surgery, right? The big buzz for me, outside of the guest appearances in NXT, and like I said, I did a Patreon show Tuesday. You know, you could mock that WWE needed Undertaker and John Cena and LA Knight and Asuka to show up at NXT. That was a great fucking night for us wrestling fans to enjoy. That was a great night for the fans in Orlando to enjoy. But not only that, that was a great fucking night for every wrestler as an NXT that is trying to work their way up. Roxanne Perez getting an ultimate test by taking on one of the greatest in Asuka, that's great for Roxanne Perez. Bron Breakker getting that Paul Heyman manage him for one night, that's fucking awesome for Bron Breakker. John Cena, as much as we've gotten used to him because we've seen him on TV for 20 years, him taking the time and being in the corner of Carmelo Hayes, that's great for Carmelo Hayes. You know, to have Cody Rhodes interact with Ilya Dragunov. Ilya Dragunov is still wrestling for their minor leagues. That's great for Ilya. A lot of those wrestlers that were there weren't just to pop a rating. Yeah, it's also because of TV negotiations, but that also is a nice rub. It's a boost. It's a morale boost to NXT that these wrestlers are coming and they're going to interact, they're going to hang out. This is a morale boost. This is not a negative thing. It's not going to happen every week. Just fucking enjoy it. And what really pissed me off, and here's another thing about AEW that Tony Khan really needs to stop. Stop making us feel that because WWE is giving us extra candy and cake, that, oh, that'll give you an upset stomach. No, you're not supposed to eat all that cake. You're not supposed to have all that candy. Stop making us feel like they're doing something wrong. Because when AEW fucking wants to do something overloaded and they want to give us 15 matches on a pay-per-view, they want to give more to get you a buy. You know, we got a great night on Tuesday. And my favorite part of the night, Brian Pillman Jr. Although I will say, we got three things left and we're going to get out of here. Brian Pillman Jr., he is now going to be called Lexus King. That is in tribute to his sisters. Alexis Pillman was one of his sisters who passed away, and Skylar King is another one of his sisters. The storyline is, everybody else loved my dad. Everybody else thought my dad was great, but he didn't do anything for me. It's a little distorted storyline because Brian Pillman Jr. was this big when Brian Pillman passed away. He's too young to be able, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of hurt in storyline that he didn't get to enjoy his childhood with his father. But to denounce the Pillman name, it's a little bit exaggerated. It's not a Goldust situation where Dustin Rhodes, you know, denounced the Rhodes name and became Goldust. This is completely different. I'm excited to see what Brian Pillman Jr. could do. But I got to say this. My only problem with the storyline, if you are denouncing your dad, then why are you still dressed like him? Why do you still have your hair like him? Why are you still wearing the Bengals? I know it's Cincinnati. WKRP in Cincinnati. Change your look a little bit. Go on, shave your head. Shave your head. Every time I look at this hair, I think of my dad. Take it off. Just don't look like Shotzi. It looks good on Shotzi. It would not look good on Brian. He's got to change his look a little bit. I mean, just imagine you come out and you look like your dad, but no, I'm Lexus King. I denounce my dad. I don't like anything about my dad. Well, you sure look like him. Well, I can't help that. Yes, you can. So that's the only issue I have with it. I'm really excited to see what Brian Pillman Jr., Lexus King, does. But I think they got to tweak his look a little bit. And something tells me in the upcoming weeks, we will. We will see a tweak. Be really interesting. Can you imagine if they did like a Goldust thing? No, they wouldn't. They would. You wouldn't want, even if it was politically correct, you do not want to duplicate that. That was very controversial, but in hindsight, it's kind of a masterpiece, what they did with Goldust. That was very intriguing at that time. That was really interesting. All right, two more things. I wanted to just share with you this quick news story for those that are interested. There's an indie wrestler by the name of Creepy the Clown, K-R-E-E-P-Y. That's actually how he dresses. He actually, you know, I give him credit. He actually looks good. It's almost like you bought Pogo on Wish, minus 200 pounds. But if you look online, you could read about this guy. A little bit of a schmuck, let's be honest. What happened was they had an indie wrestling event August 12th at the Delaware County Fairgrounds, and there was an autistic guy there. And look, I've encountered autistic fans at wrestling shows even when I indie managed, and this is not any knock on anybody with autism, but They do act at times a little bit different, maybe a little bit over the top. Not intentional, but sometimes that's their behavior. Look, I remember this episode, and it's so politically incorrect to bring up now, but somebody who, I don't want to mention his name, but somebody who I actually was in the ring with. You'll know who he is. I'll give you a hint. He's got a family member that's autistic. And I remember meeting them for the first time. And I'm not kidding. I'm not trying to be funny, but I'm just telling you. And I went up to this person. I said, hey, how you doing? How's it going? And the person looked at me and went, blah, 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 something like that. And I was just like, saying to myself, okay. And then he brought me aside. He's like, you know, this, I don't want to say it's a he or a she, but this person's autistic. So has autism. I said, oh, okay. The person ended up being one of the coolest people I ever met. But, you know, you sometimes you react and you got to understand, you know, you can't take it. Apparently there was an autistic adult at this wrestling event. And this guy, Creepy the Clown, got word into words with him. And actually the autistic fan, I think, tried to hit him. And I don't know if the person, I don't think the person actually connected because Creepy the Clown got arrested. Apparently there's some cell phone footage as well. He started beating the crap out of the autistic guy. And somebody there actually told him, no, let them fight. Let them finish it out. You know, no matter who you are with, as a wrestler, you know, you got to, and you know what's worse about it? I don't want to spend much time on it. You know, you want to look up the story, you can. What's really disturbing about it is if you go on, I think, TikTok, there is a video of this clown after the event is over, like cracking jokes and everything. Not about what happened, but you realize that this guy is video saying stupid things and he had just beat the crap out of an autistic fan. You know, so it's, you know, it's not a major story, but if you want to read about somebody called Creepy the Clown living the gimmick and being an absolute creep, go check it out. Go check it out. One last thing before we go. The movie trailer for the Iron Claw just came out. And this movie is based on the legacy and the tragedy of the Von Erich family. These are a couple of screenshots. It's a close-up, but these are a couple of screenshots of the movie trailer. And I tell you, when you look at the movie trailer, I mean, that's a retro pick, but this is like a screenshot of the movie. And I'll say this. The movie trailer looks amazing. It looks amazing. They're covering the rise of the Von Erich family and all the tragedies. They talk about Fritz. They talk about what happened to Kerry, the whole Von Erich family. The trailer blew me away. And I'm not the biggest Von Erich fan. I mean, I wasn't, you know, privy to a lot of their early stuff because I lived in New York. You know, Texas Tornado was probably the Von Erich that I saw the most. And when he was the Texas Tornado, he was already, unfortunately, having a bad problem with drugs. I will say this, this probably comes off as common sense, but, you know, when you read like Keith Elliott Greenberg and some people that I truly respect, Brian Solomon, I think, might have said it. One of them said it, but they're like, I hope that, you know, the documentary is accurate, and I hope that, listen, this is Hollywood. They are going to exaggerate a little bit. They're going to sensationalize a little bit. They're going to enhance things because it is a motion picture film. This is not a documentary. This is a movie. I'm not trying to be morbid, but nobody knows what actually happened when Kerry Von Erich walked up to the tree. Nobody knows what the final moments were for some of the members of that family. Even if somebody left a letter, you still don't know. There's going to be moments in this. I'm preparing myself. There's going to be moments in this movie where you're going to get some people online. That didn't happen like that, but it's not going to be on Young Rock level. It's not going to be on the level of Young Rock. Young Rock, they just, you know, something didn't add up, fuck it. It's good TV. You know, they just left it. This is going to be highly, highly accurate. You're going to see some familiar names in the movie. MJF has a little spot in the movie. Some indie wrestlers have spots in the film. You'll see some recognizable faces inside the ring. You know, but, you know, none of them are playing the Von Erichs. You know, you could go online, you could read about the cast and the characters, but this is going to be a really, really powerful film. As a wrestling fan, I'm extremely excited for it. I hope that it crosses over to non-wrestling fans. Because if you see the trailer, even if you never knew who Von Erich was, this looks good. And here's one thing before I finish. This movie's been in development for, what, 2+ years? We saw screenshots of some of the people cast in this film filming a year ago. This has been worked on for a long time, and it is coming out in December, I think the week of Christmas. So the week of Christmas, this will be in movie theaters, and I haven't been to the movies probably since like a Lord of the Rings. What was it, Gollop? My precious! That's the last time I was in a movie theater. No joke. That's the only reason why I remember. I went with my wife at the time. This movie I will see in a movie theater. Unless I get one of those Chinese bootlegs. You know, we used to have this woman go in the store. You want movie? $5. This Chinese lady for years used to go into my store with all these bootlegs, my office. So if I get the bootleg, then I'll watch it at home. But if not, I'm going to the movie theater. My friends, I'm out of here. Two quick super shout-outs before I go. First off, because I want to finish at the two-hour mark. Kevon Lewis, thank you for the five spot, Kevon. I think we should find out who sells Cokehead Con Coke. Tell them to keep up the good work because they're slowly ending on AEW. Look, I don't think he does that drug. His behavior is too consistent, if that's the right way to put it. You know, like, you could tell sometimes when somebody ambient tweets, that is a real thing. You could tell when someone is a little drunk and they might be writing a little bit wacky. Tony Khan's behavior is pretty consistent, which tells me I really do not believe he does. I swear to God, I just think Tony Khan is just very, very insecure. He's got a lot of hate in his heart. You know, use the methodology that I've been doing since 2006. Have people watch your product because you're good, not because other people are bad. Who gives a fuck about Triple H? Who gives a fuck about Vince McMahon? Who gives a fuck about Nick Khan, Stephanie McMahon, Shawn Michaels, NXT, John Cena, Undertaker, Asuka, Cody Rhodes? Talk about your shit, why you're good. Fuck everybody else. People aren't going to tune off because they think that WWE was telling your wrestlers to switch over while your mom was dying in a hospital. You know, and if it ends up that people feel that you might have lied, I don't think he lied. I think he probably just mixed up the dates. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. But just have people watch your shit because your shit is good. Even if people laugh at you. He truly felt that he put on a better show Tuesday. People laughed at him. Don't get upset. If you truly believe that your shit is better, leave it. That gives confidence. But, you know, DMing people about shit that they criticize, oh, that's just awful. Dream 101 with a two spot. Nick Aldis fits like a glove as GM. Maybe it's his suit. Nick Aldis is class. I'm not the biggest Nick Aldis fan. Nick Bockwinkle would not work in 2023. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why Nick Aldis is not wrestling right now. If Nick Aldis starts cutting his promos like he did years ago in Impact, even in NWA, that's not the WWE audience per se. Sure, there'll be some audience. Nick Aldis could still work. I want to see Nick Aldis wrestle once in a while. Who knows? But yesterday, I liked it. And I wish that's something that AEW would do. Cody Rhodes said early on that we will not have GMs because we believe that wrestling fans would not believe someone in a GM role when they know they're not really authority. I think that's a big mistake. You know, having somebody in the GM, I think William Regal would have been perfect for AEW. Somebody in that people respect, that is an authority figure, that I've been given the power from Tony Khan to announce this match. That match will be happening tonight. I said it Tuesday. I'll say it again here. I personally think Swerve Strickland versus Bryan Danielson could have been a shorter match and announce whoever wins that match faces MJF for the world championship later on in the night on Dynamite. Didn't have to close it out. You could still have Adam Copeland versus Luchasaurus, but I would have done that. Have Swerve Strickland and Bryan Danielson. And by the way, Jay White and Hangman Page went way too long. Way too long. It was a good match, but it went way too long. But they should have, in my opinion, in hindsight, Swerve versus Bryan Danielson should have been for the world title, number one contendership for that night. Have the match end 5-7 minutes earlier, and the winner of that match takes on MJF for the world championship later on in the night. We know MJF would have prevailed. You could have even had a Jay White bullshit finish and this and that, but that's what I would have done. And honestly, I think AEW would have definitely popped a much stronger rating. So, and near as we go off the air, I absolutely agree. Hamas must be stopped. My thoughts are with you. He is in Israel right now, going through what we are talked about earlier. You know, it's just awful to see what's going on over there. And you know, I was very careful with my words the other day, and I'm careful about it now. You know, it's there's a lot of people on both sides in Israel and in Palestine that just want to live their lives. They just want peace. You know, and you know, it's not as easy as you think. When you hear Palestinians say that Hamas will kill you or kill your family if you try to leave, what do you do? What do you do? I mean, could you just imagine? You know, it just, my country is not spectacular. I don't know anybody's country that is. But, you know, I see what goes on in other parts of the world and I say, you know what? We don't have it that bad. You know, we don't have it anywhere near that bad. And, you know, I personally feel, you know, Tuesday night in the midst of Tony Khan tweeting profanities to put that storyline with MJF right smack in the middle and then claim it's to bring awareness, you know, and then right after it when it's getting heat, we announced we're going to give 50,000 toys away at Christmas. It just, everything about it was wrong. Sorry. It that was not a teaching moment for people or awareness. That was cheap heat. That was cheap heat. Do that with a black person, do that with a gay person, do that with a Jewish person. You did with a Jewish person. Do it with any other group that you want. Do it with somebody from Japan. Do it from somebody from China. Do it for, and let's see how everybody reacts. Let's see if that's looked at as a, I mean, I brought this up on Tuesday, and I'll leave you with this. Back in 2001, does any of you remember the WWE theme song that they changed because of 9/11? Does anybody remember? This is the first thing that came to mind when I saw that Tuesday. Does anybody remember the theme song that WWE changed right after 9/11? Let the bodies hit the floor. They just felt the words too, no. They actually took that song off because of what happened on 9/11. But for MJF to bring up Muhammad Hassan, that fucking character didn't debut until 3+ years after 9/11. Not the same week the towers went down. He totally, totally blew it. But he'll get a pass because of who he is. And look, deep down inside, I know his intentions were the right ones. That's why I, you know, I don't hold it against MJF. But opening up your statement with Muhammad Hassan, you're justifying this with that. And the two are not the same. All right, everybody. I am out of here. I hope you all enjoy the rest of your weekend. If you're around Sunday night, you're more than welcome to join me at 8.05 p.m. for the sit-down. I will be here live. Then Monday, we have the Raw Post Show. We will have more matches announced for Crown Jewel. We'll get into a little bit more about the CM Punk stuff. I will tell you this, because I know somebody's going to bring it up. I originally was going to have a conversation tonight about Adam Copeland's drawing ability in 2023 with AEW. I'm going to hold off until Wednesday. I want to see what happens with Collision tonight. I want to see what happens with Dynamite next week. But that's definitely something that we need to bring attention to, because very quickly it's starting to feel more of like a, you know, a Matt Hardy, a Jeff Hardy. Even though Christian Cage is killing it, you don't see big spikes in viewership for any of those guys. But in defense, Cody Rhodes, after 3 weeks being on Raw in 2022, you know, the vibe was the same. The ratings were right back to where they were. So Adam Copeland is a nice compliment to the show, but should he be the focal point in 2023, that might be a little bit of a mistake, because just because he has a Hall of Fame career, just because he's got a Hall of Fame personality, just because he's got a Hall of Fame wife, just because he's got a whole legacy and we envision some fantasy matches or some reuniting, doesn't mean that wrestling fans in 2023 are all clamoring to see that. You could use the same analogy Tony Khan did. A million people didn't even watch Undertaker. A million people didn't even watch John Cena. Not even 500,000 wanted to see Adam Copeland. What is that? And that's Collision. And that's Rampage or Dynamite. What does that say? You know, is anybody outside of Roman Reigns, is anybody that must see TV? Maybe MJF. MJF may be the only exception besides Roman Reigns. Who is must-see TV that will get those spikes? I don't know if Adam Copeland is it. I don't think it is. Revamp, you're right. The song Let the Bodies Hit the Floor came out in May of 2001. And after 9/11, that song was never played again. Trust me, I remember covering it on my hotline. They stopped playing it because they didn't want people to say those lyrics, sing those lyrics after what happened with 9/11. So, okay. Revamp says the song was not used in the 90s. Did I ever say it was used in the 90s? All right, let me get out of here. It was not used after 9/11 because it was inappropriate. That's the bottom line. My friends, I'm out of here. Have a good weekend. I got to go pick up her mutt. And remember, Tony, from one Tony to another, don't be a chooch. Don't be a chooch.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.